And now, the Sandhills' number one morning show, Mornings with the Leader Man, here on Talk 97.3 FM, 104.1 FM, and 990 AM WEEB. And heard and seen around the world at talk973.com.
The best part of waking up is waking up with us.
Talk 97.3 FM, 104.1 FM, and 990 AM WEEB. Welcome back to Mornings with the Leader Man. My name is Brad LaDronca, filling in for Steve the Leader Man this morning. Alongside me is Moore County's one and only Mr. Stephen Woodward. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Brad. Good morning, Leader Man. Good morning, everybody, on this momentous Monday here in the Sandhills.
Weather for us today here in the Sandhills, we're looking at a high of 69 degrees with a low this evening of 48, completely clear and sunny outside. Currently it is 43 degrees with winds out of the north-northeast at 4 miles per hour. I hope you brought your jacket, hoodie, sleepwear, what have you, to your early voting. All right, we're going to get into it right away here this morning, Stephen. We've got a very special guest on the line with us. He is our state
representative.
Representative, Mr. Neil Jackson. Good morning, Neil. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for taking some time out this morning with us to chat and stuff. You are up for re-election currently right now in District 78, that's correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. And
78 is Pinehurst, all the way down, Robbins, Westmore, Eagle Springs, all the way down that side of the county.
Yeah, High Falls area, and then you stretch up into Randolph County, right? Southern and Eastern Randolph County?
Yes, sir. So I tell everybody, basically, it's the zoo all the way to the golf courses, but really there's a little leg that goes up Toyota and Liberty that's in my district, goes up almost all the way to Pleasant Garden.
Okay.
Neil, thank you for joining us. We are happy to have you this morning after a momentous weekend for the red wave at all levels of this election cycle. Obviously, the trend for early voting is great for all candidates, including your candidacy. What do you make of this Republican surge in early voting, breaking our old habit of waiting till Election Day? To me, it is a signal that we have a motivated electorate.
So I totally believe if you watch the event last night in Madison Square Garden, to pull that kind of crowd in New York City, there's something happening. So I am hopefully optimistic. Now, my mama taught me, don't count your chickens before they hatch. So I just want to encourage, I mean, right now we've had about 28,000 people vote in Moore County. we got a whole lot more people that need to vote. So there could be a dim wave the last week or on election day. So I don't want to do any kind of victory dance or anything like that. But across the state, and see, we trying to hold our supermajority in the House. It's just radical upswings in some of the craziest counties that you would. I mean, Chatham County, we got a great Republican, Joe Godfrey, running there. And we're up 105% in Chatham County. Forsyth County, Jeff Zinger's there. Pitt County, all these counties that you wouldn't expect. Alamance County, Brunswick County, we're 130% of where we were. So a lot of great things are happening, but there's still a lot of time to go. So if you have not voted, I encourage you, get out and vote. And the good thing now, the lines aren't as crazy as they were the first week. So really, probably this week's going to be the best time for you to go vote. My wife voted on Saturday. I think she had to wait 5 minutes.
Yeah, we're sounding that trumpet here every morning on the early voting locations and hours. And I will say, even when you have to wait in line, which I did, it was like a 1 hour investment, which to me was time very well spent. Now, you made a good point about the state house races. You know, we fixate on obviously the presidential race to some degree. The race for governor is very much on the radar, important. But we have something in Raleigh right now, which is a veto-proof supermajority. And can you give us an update on where we stand with retaining that going into the election day, one week from tomorrow?
So supermajority is so that if we, unfortunately, we're not to win the governorship, which I'm hoping and praying that we do, we have to override the governor. Because all of our good legislation, I mean, common sense stuff like boys not playing in women's sports, Cooper and Stein are for that. And so when they veto that legislation that we sent up, we have to have in the House 72 votes, and they have to have 30 in the Senate in order to be able to do that. Otherwise, he kills all of our good legislation. So if you like getting tax cuts, your taxes under Republicans are going to 3.99% next year. And so all of that happens because you have a Republican majority, and if you are supermajority, because Governor Cooper and Governor Stein, God forbid, they're going to veto all that legislation. So we got to have 72. We are targeted 75 seats that we are very close on. There's about five seats, and they are razor tight. And we need to win three of them, but five would be great.
And you, let me just reiterate what you just said: 3.99% state income tax. That would place North Carolina among the having among the lowest state income taxes in the country, putting aside the zero states like Tennessee and Florida. But that's a major move in the right direction. And as you say, you know, it's comical. Over the last several years, watching North Carolina receive one accolade after another as the place to be to open and expand business, to grow your business, as one of the most business-friendly states, as one of the most desirable places to move, to relocate, and raise a family. And this governor stands there with that empty grin on his face, asking us to thank him for all that he's done, and yet it is our Republican legislature that has created the conditions that we now enjoy.
In 2010, when the Republicans took over, we were $2 billion in debt to the federal government. Now we have $9 billion in rainy day funds and the various reserve funds, $9 billion. So not only have we cut your taxes more than in half, we have socked away money for catastrophes like we just had in Western North Carolina. That is fiscal discipline, fiscal responsibility, and that's what I would think every North Carolinian would want for our state government.
Now, Neil, I'm gonna take you back to just because of the talk about the supermajority. Now, there's been one story after another, seems like, throughout the year about the Opportunity Scholarship and what you guys did with House Bill 10. Now, Governor Cooper has vetoed that bill. Josh Stein has come out and said he wants to go a step beyond what Governor Cooper was talking about, where he was saying he was just wanting to freeze that scholarship fund at the current levels. Josh Stein wants to completely roll it back. When do you think you guys are going to go in to vote to override that veto?
Probably it's going to be November 19th when we go back. And see, that's the ICE bill. And
right.
Just a philosophy difference between Republicans and Democrats. And no, I got so many Democrat friends, but on some of them, I mean, if you commit a felony in North Carolina, the SB 10 that you're talking about, it says the sheriff has to notify ICE that this is a illegal immigrant that has committed a felony and they need to be deported. That's rape. That's murder. I mean, these are serious offenses that they're doing. And the Dems are like opposing us for, I mean, these are not the brainiacs coming in here from China. This is the worst of the worst that are coming in here and doing harm in our district. And thank God for Sheriff Fields, who stands up boldly and courageously and does what's right. But not every sheriff is doing that. That's SB 10. And it also has the Opportunity Scholarship piece in there. And I want all of our listeners to know, the Republican Party is for public schools. We are for our teachers, but we just believe in every situation, competition is a great thing. And God gives children to parents to raise, not the government. And so parents know what's best for their children. And in some cases, that may be homeschooling. Some cases, that may be charter schools. Some cases, that may be private schools. And every one of those parents are paying taxes. And so we believe that those tax dollars should follow the child, and you shouldn't be locked into a failing public school if the parent said, no, this charter school or this private school might be a better option for our family for this phase of our life.
Well, I, for one, Neil, am one of those parents that do have a child in a private school, and I am one that is now considered on the wait list for the Opportunity Scholarships. So I do thank you guys for, you know, pushing for the expansion of it. I do, you know, I've been on this station multiple times preaching about the benefits of the Opportunity Scholarship and why it is a needed thing for those. Now, there was a lot of media coverage, specifically on WRAL over the summer, about how the House and the Senate couldn't get together on what to do with funding on this. So kind of going forward, assuming that we continue to have a super majority, I mean, do you see things being able to be agreed upon a little bit better so that we can get a conservative agenda, you know, continue to be pushed forward, especially if Josh Stein wins the governorship?
Great question. That's a fantastic question. The Republican Party is a big party, and sometimes the House and Senate, and I thank God for Senator McGinnis, our Moore County Senator. He is just the best of the best. But sometimes the Senate may have a proposal, and the House, a lot of times, especially going forward, we might be a little bit more conservative. And in some situations, like the one you bring up, the Senate has been more fiscally responsible than the House has. And so that's really what that battle was. So will the House and Senate always get along on the big things? Absolutely. But how you carry it out, sometimes there might be a little bit of give and take, because we don't have an executive, so the legislature is having to run the whole state. Do I foresee things getting better when we go back in January? I see the House getting more conservative when we go back in January. Compassionate conservative, but we're going to stick by our conservative principles. And our Senate colleagues, depending upon what the issue is, I think that we will get a whole lot done for the state of North Carolina.
Well, I guess it would start with being able to pass a budget in a more timely fashion. I think there's been a lot of frustration in that regard. Do you see that just the basic fundamental passing of a budget becoming a little bit less drama filled?
So I have two answers to that, and I'm not playing games with you, but I'm not a government fan, so I don't like government. I mean, you look at Western North Carolina. Government didn't sweep in and save the day.
Nope.
Private citizens did. Our churches did. Businesses did. So the way I describe it a lot of times, government is a watchdog that's to be fed, not a cow that's to be milked. And I think so many mindsets in North Carolina, we just want to use government as the difference in North Carolina, it's not like federal government where if we don't pass a budget, the government shuts down. No, we just stay on last year's budget. And I can tell you, last year's budget, there was a lot of waste in there. So do I see us being able to get along better going forward? I really do. I see us, we're going to have a new speaker coming in and a new leadership and committed to doing what's right in the state of North Carolina, especially on fiscal matters. So I do, but it's not the end of the world if we keep restraining government. And right. And a lot of times, I mean, the Republican form of government, you have to cut taxes, but you have to control spending. And even in North Carolina, we could do better at controlling spending. I don't think we've done the best that we could in that area.
Well, that's encouraging to hear that, because I think it's always important to keep an eye on the spending, and never allow it to become a bloated situation just because we happen to be, you know, economically well off as a state. Before we go, you know, we can never let a day go by without thinking of our fellow citizens in Western North Carolina. Based on what your interactions with your fellow lawmakers who represent those folks, how is the prognosis now? Are we feeling a little better about getting some of these communities in a direction, at least, of getting back to normal, or where do you think we stand there? Because I think it's very important that we remain vigilant about exactly how catastrophic this is and was.
Yes. So, Steve, Tracy and I are going to be in Nicaragua. We leave the day after the election. So every year I usually go to a third world country just because, I mean, we are blessed in America, and most of the world doesn't know the luxury and the blessings that we do here in North Carolina in Moore County. A lot of North Carolina doesn't even know the benefits that we have. But when I went to Western North Carolina, 3 weeks ago, just the devastation. I mean, one county, they totally lost their water treatment. I mean, totally, completely. It's 4 years to get that back. And so, I mean, imagine in Moore County if all of our water treatment was washed away. I mean, what's the hope there? I mean, government's not going to come in and just wave a magic wand. And yet the citizens of North Carolina, I mean, we should thank God that we have people like we do in North Carolina. They have risen to the occasion. I mean, Samaritan's Purse is bringing in these humongous temporary water treatment systems just to fill the place. I mean, I know of churches, they put in wells just for their community. They have no need for it whatsoever. They just put in wells so that people can come and get water free of charge. That is not government at its best. It's the people of North Carolina at their best. And that's the hope of our state. That's the hope of our country is people, I believe, under the leadership of God Almighty, doing our civic and our responsibility as good neighbors. And so I love living in North Carolina. I love being a resident of Moore County because we are God-fearing people who just love our neighbor as ourself, the way that Scripture tells us to.
Couldn't say it any better. Neil Jackson, our state representative, District 78, best of luck with your reelection, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Yep, thank you, Neil.
God bless, guys.
Bye now. All right, that was Neil Jackson joining us. I think he gave us some kind of great insights on some questions, you know, kind of that we've had over the course of this thing here. So one thing that we normally do at the beginning and top of every hour or show is usually talk about your early voting locations, which
yes.
Early voting does end this coming Saturday, November the 2nd. You can vote in two locations, the Agricultural Center in Carthage and the Aberdeen Recreation Center down on U.S. Highway 1. If you're heading south, it's going to be on your right-hand side. If you're heading north, it'll be on your left-hand side, just for those that have dyslexic tendencies, I guess you could say. Hours of operation Monday through Friday this week, 8 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. This Saturday, the final Saturday of early voting, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Statewide, we have had, and this is through Saturday, we have had roughly just under 2.6 million people that have voted in person. Little over 2.7 million total, so those are mail-in absentee ballots. 35% of the total registered voters have already voted early in just a little over 1 week. That is absolutely amazing.
That's beautiful. And that tells you that that people are attuned to the moment in time where we find our nation, I think.
Well, these figures are even more mind-blowing. So just under 910,000 are registered Democrats. Just under 940,000 registered Republicans have voted. And 875,000 unaffiliated have voted early already. So Republicans are getting out there, showing strong, and just knocking it out of the park. I mean, that's great to see.
Yeah, when you consider that we are 30,000 ballots cast ahead of the Democrats in early voting, I mean, that is never happened before.
No.
Unprecedented. It can't be overstated how significant that is. And I think the number that I saw for a total votes cast may have, I don't know, maybe this one's a little more updated, 2.74 million. So that's trending even better.
So it's 2,740,733 is the total ballots cast statewide, including in person, early in person, absentee and mail-in ballot. So
right.
Tremendous showing so far here.
And you know, here's a cautionary tale. If you just sit down for a few minutes and think about some of the people in your life who you don't see all the time, but you know, you have a friendly relationship with them, you have their phone number, you can send them a text, just make a little list of some of those people and just reach out to them and say, have you voted yet? Can I help you with information about where to vote? And I did this on and off over the weekend, and I got a lot of responses from people, again, who I haven't communicated with, in some cases in months, you know, and they're, hey, great to hear from you. Yes, I have voted, or I'm voting next Saturday during early voting. But here's one of the responses I got, and here's why it's important. Of course, I'm not going to identify the individual, but a friend of ours texted me and said, what do I do if my license is expired? Do I have time to get a new one or some form of ID so I can vote? Now, that wasn't something that was easy for an individual to admit,
right?
That I've let my license expire, okay? But nonetheless, there is an answer to that question, which is, yes, you can. You can go get a state photo ID relatively quickly, and yes, you do still have time to get out and vote. And that's why it's important to reach out to that sphere of influence in your life, because that one extra vote, you know, counts as much as the ones that have already been cast.
Well, two things I'm gonna comment on that real quickly is, so if you do have an expired driver's license, you do not necessarily have to go to a DMV office to renew it. You can do it online. It's very quick, and I think that will suffice because you get a actual printout. You'll get a receipt that it's been renewed.
Yes,
you should be able to do that. If nothing else, you can still go down to early vote, and there is some provisions, some paperwork that you can get. You can still do your ballot. You just have to then, I believe, carry it back to the Board of Elections office and actually turn it in there with proper proof of ID, I believe, as well. I'd have to look that up for sure on that one. As we do every Monday morning, we run down the local high school football scores. So we have 1 week left to go in the season. Coming Friday, yeah. I mean, I can't believe it's already blown through us. So 8-1, Pinecrest Patriots beat Hope County this past Friday night to a tune of 46-26. Their next game is a local rivalry against Union Pines. 6-3 Union Pines Vikings lost to the Southern Lee team 26-23 in what looked like it was a nail biter for sure. And then 4-5 Northmore Mustangs lost to Cummings 46-26. Their next game this coming Friday is against 1-8 Chatham Central. Looks like that should be a win. So your local sports update there on that one.
And by the way, just to continue the dialogue on the early voting, if you look at the numbers nationally, they're also staggering. The University of Florida Election Lab has an early voter tracker. It indicates that more than 32 million people have cast an early vote so far, with more than 14.8 million people voting in person and 17.8 million having returned a mail-in ballot as of Friday, so it's surely gone up over the weekend. And among those 32 million plus, almost 9 million of those early voters have come from the 7 swing states, which are seeing a surge in early Republican voting, led by Georgia and, as we've mentioned, North Carolina. So the numbers are not only encouraging statewide, but they are equally staggering nationally. And let's keep it up.
Well, we just got a little bit of time left here in this first half hour. I wanted to touch base on one quick thing. So there's been a lot of talk about endorsements, this person endorsing this person endorsing that person. What's funny is the Washington Post came out over the weekend and said, we are not going to endorse any president. Over the past 50 years, they have not endorsed a single Republican. Now, what's to note of that is they're not endorsing Kamala Harris. This also follows the lead of, I believe it's the LA Times,
yes,
that did not endorse
correct
anybody. But what's more interesting is the New York Post came out and said they are endorsing former President Donald Trump. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. I think you're seeing a huge momentum swing towards Donald Trump. But we've just got a few seconds left to go here. I want to remind you guys, join us back here at 8:30. We do have another special guest coming in.